You, my friend, are listening to the longest-running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I am Guy Grumpy, the host of this show, and I really want to thank Noodle Soup, more on him later, Ridiculous Hat, Beef Squatch, and James W. for your generosity in staying patrons during my absence. For the rest of you, I know I need to earn your trust back, and more on that later, too. For anyone listening that would still like to subscribe, our Patreon site is patreon.com/thehappyhearthstone. Membership started at just $1 and gets you early access to new episodes, and occasionally even before edits have been applied. I do appreciate all listeners, and if you have any feedback, please feel free to reach out to me. But in the meantime, let's get into why you're here. So I know that the last couple of times I've created content for the Happy Hearthstone, there's some pretty big gaps in between. And so in order to get better, I've had a colleague that you've heard from before that was interested in coming on as a co-host. And how could I refuse that? That gives me that extra accountability to make sure that the shows get done. And also gives me somebody, if I need to take a break, that can run it themselves. So welcome, Noodle Swoop, to our Happy Hearthstone hosting.
And thanks for having me join you as well, Guy. You know, ever since starting picking up podcasts and joining the Hearthstone community, it's always been kind of some sort of enjoyment of mine to have a different way to enjoy Hearthstone in a form that, you know, is digestible sometimes on the ride home when you can't be playing the game, but you still want to be kind of engaged with the game. Or maybe you're just on lunch at work. You can't quite fit in a game on ladder, but you want to be up to date on all the information that's going on. So joining the podcast community kind of as a mainstay just feels like the right place for me. And also I enjoy hanging out with you. So that's just kind of like,
likewise,
just an easy way to be able to be there and also be able to kind of enjoy this with you. And you know, we'll learn the ropes together kind of, we'll go from there.
I'm sure our rapport will carry out at some point when we understand, so I don't talk over you and things like that. But I'm super happy that you came to me and suggested it. I thought that's the perfect way to make sure that there's still content, because I know that there's been some pretty big gaps that I'm embarrassed by.
Well, and I don't think it's anything to be embarrassed by either. I mean, life has a way of having its ups and downs, especially with what all's going on, even recently with a lot of things. It's kind of hard to have kind of good stability without people kind of at your back. So realize I have your back, and that's what I'm offering. And hopefully the listeners will enjoy that too. Kind of that back and forth between us too, because you'll even hold me accountable as well, because as it is for myself, I have not been able to really stream much either myself. So this also allows me a chance to still engage with the community, granted in a different aspect.
Well, we're definitely grateful to have you here at the Happy Hearthstone. And that kind of leads us right into the Happy Hearthstone. We talk a little bit about what's making us happy. And I have to say, what we just talked about is what is making me happy today, having Noodle Soup on with me for this journey as co-host. And yeah, look forward to lots of good things to come. What about you?
I'm definitely happy to join you as well. For me personally today, I got done with all my my Christmas shopping, and was able to, you know, check off that on the list, knowing that also all my stuff that I ordered has been delivered, and I just have a few last minute things to wrap up, and that's making me happy, knowing that the holidays are going to be a happy one, because you know, I managed to not have to get right down to the wire, although it's pretty close, but still feels good to be there.
Yeah. So my gift was to Jill was a year-long membership to a local gym. And I got one for myself as well. So I don't know if it counts because it started a few days or a few weeks before. Christmas, but I'm still gonna count that. It's hard to wrap.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great one too. I know for myself, like I was really into hitting the gym hard before everything went on, and I know I've taken a step back myself. So you're getting after it even faster than I am, so more power to you.
We wanted to use it before the January influx of people that might have all the machines used at the same time too. So
yeah, because they
will at least get some good exercise in the meantime.
You don't want all those New Year's resolutions kicking in, right?
Right. Which I think that's going to be a fun one to go through our Hearthstone resolutions for the new year, but we'll get there a little bit closer to New Year's Day. All right, so next up, what we wanted to talk about is how Blizzard has been bombarding us almost daily with new things to buy, whether it's new portraits or for various modes, or just packs of cards in bundled weird ways, or mercenaries coins, things like that. It seems like every day there's one or two more sales that are limited that you have to pull in. And it's actually kind of hard to keep up with. Makes you wonder why they are doing that, actually. You have any thoughts?
Definitely. I know, like, there was a call early on for, like, Battlegrounds for monetization, like, getting all the various portraits for different heroes. And I know a lot of people were excited about that, but now it seems to be almost overkill. And I'm also one of those, like, on my phone, like, I can't handle having all the notifications on there, but the app also has notifications whenever there's something new in the shop. And so, like, once you log in, it's like you immediately have to, like, click it. And then I feel like it should be longer before I have to go back in there again, but I feel like I'm almost in there daily.
Exactly. And there's some good stuff. Don't get me wrong. If you ask for any of that for Christmas and you're already friends with your partner or who you think would enjoy it, then you can deliver it. You can get it on Christmas Day. You don't even have to go out of your house to get that in, that upgrade or bundle packages.
I mean, the other side of it, though, is that it does allow you to very much customize, like, your experience. You're never going to run into, I think, the same players that are playing the same heroes with the same card backs necessarily. Although, I do have to say that I've seen the pirate Garrosh, like, a lot, but that's also because Pirate Warrior is a big thing, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, beyond that, I feel like every other class, you're pretty much seeing a good mix. And that's kind of nice. I mean, being able to customize, you don't have to buy everything, but it kind of feels like sometimes you want to.
Yeah, that's the whale in me. I can't leave one on the table. All right, so let's talk about the nerfs then. I'll turn it over to you for your thoughts as we go through these.
Yeah.
And definitely we'll chime in.
And so we had the patch notes. They came out a couple days ago. I mean, obviously, it'll be closer to almost a half a week by the time this releases. But they did a bunch of balance updates for Standard, which followed after the Worlds. So with that, Celestial Alignment went from... 7 cost to 8 cost, with the dev comment of, although Celestial Alignment is not usually a card used for from hand burst damage, it does frequently allow for absurd turns that happen a little earlier than we feel is healthy, and moving it up a mana should allow for more setup and counterplay before Celestial Alignment is cast.
Have you run into much of Celestial Alignment, Druid?
Before the nerf, quite a bit. It was definitely one of the mainstay decks, and you kind of felt like, you know, if there was overgrowth on 4, then you were gonna see Celestial Alignment on 7, which was the next turn. And then pretty much there was not much you could do counterplay wise. You could play one card that next turn, meanwhile they were about to play, you know, 6 or 7 as their follow up. Especially if they had it with Anacondra. Since then, I've seen it played again, although now not as frequently. I think I've only seen one. It definitely allows for aggressive decks to kind of get that foothold before that turn happens. And I know I've been able to, the few interactions that I've had, I've been able to get under it, like complete out my taking them out before they actually were able to do much damage with it.
So I still struggle to see how that's actually used. Watching the worlds was kind of funny because a couple people did bring the alignment druids. And it seemed like the casters were saying that they should cast that spell a little earlier than I would have. I was like, you have still other things to set up the board and yada, yada, yada. But it won a couple of games. And I was watching, but I didn't make sense how it worked. So I think that was one I have to dig a little bit more into.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with using Anacondra to basically make it so that way your spells are reduced beyond. Now they're one, and now nature spells then are free or less than free with Anacondra on the board. And so then they're able to use multiples of them to then gain more mana on their side, draw more cards, and then even use like a solar Cenarian ward so that way they can gain armor and then also develop a board. Meanwhile, you're left with playing one card as a response.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
The next nerf was to Alliance Bannerman, going from a 3-mana 2/2 to a 3-mana 2/1. Dev's comments was that Paladins have a very consistent and powerful package of cards that they can include in quite a few distinct strategies. Alliance Bannerman is one of those cards that can fit into a wider range of decks, and lowering its health by one should tone down Paladin decks by a small amount across the board.
Now, I know you're a Paladin first player, so what do you really think about that nerf?
I feel like it's a nonsense nerf. It's more the effect of the card, which says, draw your powerful Battlecry minion, especially in Libram Paladin, and then also, by the way, give it +1/+1. It's not so much the stats from the Alliance Bannerman that is really doing much of anything. It's the added effect of drawing very important minions and then also buffing them. So
I kind of thought that was weird too, that it's not something that you need to really react to once it's on the board. Or one health is really easy to take it out. Two health is also, but I don't know.
It
feels like it'll slow things down a little bit.
Honestly, it just feels like they were trying to figure out something and that was their fix, but I don't know. It's not where Paladin really was impacted with these nerfs anyways, if you ask me.
Are you going to miss it? Are you still going to play it?
So currently I have been playing a buff Paladin, and I don't even use the card. So I'm not going to miss it because I haven't been using it. But that was because I felt like even at 3-mana 2/2, it was too much of a loss of a tempo to play that, only because I was going for a much more aggressive play pattern, where on 3-mana, I'm either playing the Stonehearth Vindicator and drawing a buff spell at the same time to either buff that Vindicator or what I've already placed on the board, or playing a Goody Two Shields, both of which are much more aggressive tempo wise than the 3-mana 2/2. And I couldn't take a turn off to be able to Alliance Bannerman. It just didn't fit the play pattern that I was going for.
Interesting. Yeah, I've played a little bit of your, maybe it's an older version of that that deck, and it was a lot of fun. You don't really miss the boosting, except for what you get from the hero power.
From Kariel, correct. Yeah.
From Kariel. Yeah.
And that hero card is amazing, and they haven't done anything to touch that one, and I'm sure glad they haven't. So moving on, Efficient Octobot went from the old cost of 2 mana to 3 mana, with Dev's comment of Efficient Octobot has been a little too efficient at the upper echelons of play, and we're slowing it down as part of the general goal of toning down the power level of combo strategies. And this is exactly what I think needed to happen with Efficient Octobot. It probably should have been a 3 mana 1/4 for quite some time. The fact that it oftentimes would come out on a turn 2 and there wasn't much of a recourse that could be brought to eliminate a 4 health minion at that, you know, early stage of the game, definitely allowed for multiple discounts to be had on multiple cards, and sometimes even more cards if the opponent wasn't even able to damage the Octobot prior to their next turn on turn 3. So
yeah, so for that one, I think it was more geared towards the top players, because down in lower ranks, people have misused this card all the time anyway, because it's a pretty hard deck to master, any of them that are using the Octobot, but especially the Miracle variants. So this will slow those down a little bit, but probably not enough to not run it.
Yes, I think it's still a great card. It's definitely still going to see play at 3 mana, for sure. And moving on, Snowfall Guardian went from the old cost of 5 mana to 6 mana, with the dev comment of Snowfall Guardian was designed with the intent of giving free shaman decks a powerful tool, but it's a little too efficient at locking up the board, especially when combined with other cards like Brilliant Macaw. Moving it up 1 mana should soften the power of this interaction.
I tend to agree with the dev's comments there. I think this will end up being a little bit, I don't know that 1 mana would make you take it out either, though, because, you know, freezing everything and buffing 1 minion seems pretty strong, even at 6 mana.
Yeah,
for 3/3.
Even at 6 mana, then there's also other cards that can also reduce the cost of elementals.
All right.
Including the Auction House Gavel, which is routinely used in free shaman. But then there's also other elementals that discount as well. So we may see either those elementals coming along to synergize with the Snowfall Guardian, or maybe just it continuing to be run as it is, with the gavel being able to reduce its cost and bring it right back to where it was before.
That makes a lot of sense.
Touch of the Nathrezim. I'm not going to say that right. For
you get to set what it says, how it's pronounced now since you're on the podcast.
So definitely, I'm going to say Touch of the Nathrezim. So the old was that it if dealt 2 damage to a minion, and if it died, it restored 4 health to your hero. Now you deal 2 damage to a minion still, and if it dies, you restore 3 health to your hero. The dev's comment was that Touch of the Nathrezim is meant to be a solid removal option for slower warlock decks, but the overall health restoration in warlock is slightly too high, and this was meant to be a softer change that leaves warlock with a powerful removal option, but reduces the overall warlock healing capabilities enough to bring that aspect of the class back in line.
I definitely feel like they needed to do something with the sheer amount of healing that the warlock class has. It just seems crazy sometimes when you have to do 200 damage to them or whatever.
And definitely I feel that way. There's been times where I felt like, wait, are we sure this isn't Priest? And Priest is the one that's supposed to be right. Doing the healing, right? But instead, I remember when the card first came out, and I remember It was Coin Concede's card that they they released. And I remember when I heard what it was, I was like, that's busted. It's a busted card. And it's definitely going to see play, and it's definitely going to give a ton of healing and make it so that way aggro decks can't get that initial footing, especially at one mana. Do I think that that's going to be enough with some of the other changes? It might be, for sure.
Yeah, I think that everyone still runs it. Just for that healing, even if it's one less, it's not that significant. But we shall see.
All right. And the Rune Mithril Rod, its old cost before this nerf was 4 mana. It's now 2/5 mana. And the dev comment is that Rune Mithril Rod was an incredibly strong tool in the first few days after the launch of Fractured in Alterac Valley, while players were able to find a counter to it in cards like Rustrot Viper. We believe going up a mana here will lend to a healthier play patterns for the game overall.
I agree with that assessment. All through the worlds, then they were talking about how this card kind of needed to be addressed. It's just so efficient, and it hits all of the cards in your hand instead of just individual ones. So it just makes it slightly too good. At 5 mana, then it makes it a little bit tougher to keep, but I think we'll still see it at least on the outset.
Yeah, and I mean, originally when this first came out, it was 3 mana. It's gone through 2 revisions, so that's also tells you how powerful a card it is that they've had to go back yet again to touch it again. And it's just, I was surprised that they went to 5 mana instead of just like doing something like reducing its durability to 1, to where they don't get all of those discounts twice. Yeah. Again, this is another way to go about it. If it costs 5 mana, maybe you can't take a 5 mana do nothing turn. And that will, lead to other decks being able to use that turn to have some counterplay along with other cards like Rustrot Viper being out there.
Cool.
Blood Cell Deckhand. So the old was that it was a 1 mana 2 attack, 2 health minion, and now it is moving to 2 attack and 1 health. They're reverting a previous change to the Blood Cell Deckhand. Questline Warrior ended up slightly stronger than intended, and we believe it'll continue to find success after this change.
Yeah, I've been playing a fair amount of Pirate Warrior, and I don't think this is going to slow it down much at all, because it's the battle cry that you care about, and that only gets used once anyway. So, the funny thing is, there's not that many weapons in at least the version that I was playing. You could generate some, but ones that you would cast from your hand, there's just one option, or maybe 2 options of what you throw in to take advantage of these. So I think it stays just because it is only used once or twice, but the battle cry isn't even on this turn. It's whenever you draw your weapon. So
yeah,
I'm not sure it's going to do enough to fix the brokenness of Mr. Smite.
to be honest, I'm not even sure. Like, I know Smite is a real big question for a lot of people. When it first came out, there were calls for the nerf on Smite right away. But Smite has fit into a lot of various decks and created a lot of different archetypes too, including in Rogue. I've seen a OTK that involves Smite as well. This card isn't the card that I thought was problematic in Quest Pirate Warrior anyways. For me, it's the card that came from the mini set with their 3 mana 3/3.
Right.
Is that what it was? That shoots,
oh yeah, the one that shoots missiles.
The cannonballs. Like, I'm surprised that one didn't get touched where it was like, okay, instead of two cannonballs, it gets one. You know, because if you got two of them out there, that's that, you know, they're each doing eight damage. Like, and that's not even that's without them even attacking themselves.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And granted, it's random, but it doesn't feel so random when you don't have a board anymore and it's just going phase.
Although most of the time in Pirate Warrior, you're not worried as much about the board. You're just worried about the face. So still kind of iffy. It's not going to change anything. You might sub it out for something a little bit more useful. I've been wanting to go tinker with it a little bit more. And actually, this was one of the cards I wanted to take out because there's not enough weapons. Maybe the 5/1 that gets more durability would be a good one to throw in there, but I'm not even sure if that's a warrior.
Yeah, the tradable weapon. Yeah, that's a warrior weapon.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That came from the mini set as well. So then moving on, we have the Iron Deep Trog, which the old was, after your opponent casts a spell, summon a copy of this. To the new, after your opponent casts a spell, summon another Iron Deep Trog. With the dev comment of Iron Deep Trog has the capability of running away with games very early when combined with minion buffs like Noble Mount or Doggy Biscuit. Taking into account the rest of the changes we're making with this patch, we wanted to adjust Trog to remain a viable counter to early spells, but to be a better match the targeted power level of the format as a whole.
And I really don't like this nerf just because it was so much fun to play with.
I'm very saddened by this nerf. I had a lot of fun playing with Iron Deep Trog, and I will bid him farewell.
So this is enough for you to not use him?
No, I think there's still plenty of decks that can utilize the Iron Deep Trog. I'm saddened because I like the original form. I'm surprised he didn't go to like two mana with the same stats, or something else that resulted in maybe it not running away with the game. I feel like this change kind of really does change it, but I mean, there's still definitely decks out there like the aggro druid, and even like a quest paladin might be able to see use out of it because it's still one mana and it does create more of a board, and you include like things like Dunbalder Bridge. Like, I could see it being used, but it definitely doesn't retain the same feel. It's very much like I liken it to the Crab Rider nerf. You know, Crab Rider was
that's exactly what I was thinking.
It was phenomenal, and did some crazy, crazy things. Now, I would agree they were definitely busted. It felt busted when I was doing it. And there are definitely some games that I felt like Iron Deep Trog kind of did the same thing, because you would play it on one and there's so many quests that, like, if you're playing against a quest deck, they can't even play their quest. Like, the Trog's on the board, it's going to make a copy of it. It's like, no, I don't want to take a turn off and give you another minion to attack my face with, to then you're going to buff it up and then it's going to just snowball out of control. So I can understand that, but at the same time, it did create a different type of kind of interesting counterplay, and that is, you know, boards or decks that just relied on like casting spells and combos couldn't just ignore the Trog anymore. And I don't know if with this change, if that's going to create more of a board-based meta, which is kind of what it was doing. It was warping the meta as it was, and that's probably why it also got the change that it did.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think it's still a good card and what a fun card to play, especially with all of the spell heavy decks that are in this meta. So it's still something you have to deal with, even if it's just another 1/2. But depending on what you are, what class you're playing, you can buff it in many different ways. The Iron Deep Trog, a lot of fun. And may still get played, but just in different decks than we've been seeing it used in.
For sure. I think there's still a place for it to find its footing. It's just how we go about it, which decks it fits in. The one that I was using it in, it's not going to be used in anymore. But that's also because, like, Intrepid Initiate is also a very adequate replacement. Can give you kind of that early tempo that I was looking for as well. So there's probably decks out there that are doing the same thing, switching them up, and or they were already using the Intrepid Initiate as it was, like in Facehunter. Mm-hmm. So the Morgue Artificer, it went from the old cost of 2 mana with 2 attack and 4 health to the new cost of 3 mana with 2 attack and 5 health. The dev comment of Morgue Artificer does too much too efficiently for decks with large amounts of removal. Increasing its cost by 1 will make the card a little less efficient as a tool for cheap clears, large amounts of life gain, and combo finishers.
I'm not sure I'm ready for a 5 health minion on turn 3 with such a powerful effect. Granted, his spells also affect their side of the board. So yeah, I'm not too sure that I want that ability with 5 health behind it, especially because it just makes it a little bit harder, puts it out of range of a lot of the early clear. It's still fairly early at 3 mana, although maybe you can't as efficiently set up an OTK. So,
And I think that's kind of where they're going with it, as they're kind of targeting that lifesteal demon hunter with the change is putting it at even another mana point that they either need to discount or add into their calculations in order to be able to get that OTK that they're looking for. Meanwhile, though, getting to 5 health, yeah, that is a big deal. I think about, you know, just the simple 4 mana consecration. It previously would have removed an artificer, and now it's still going to stick around on the board. So you need something else to remove it. I don't always necessarily agree with the changing the stats while also changing the mana cost. I almost wonder if it would have been like a 3-4 if we would have felt the same way.
A 3-4 for 3 with that ability is also a little bit too powerful. But honestly, though, this can now be played in odd decks in Wild now, too. So we may see some crazier things on the... is that Baku or...
it is Baku.
Who's the other one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even is Gen.
Yeah, so that would be interesting to see how that changes if it gets thrown in another different Warlock deck, etc.
For sure. So then alongside with the changes, which were nerfs above, they also wanted to increase some of the playability of some of the other cards, so they did some buffs. With that, they've adjusted Beefstalker Tavish. His old hero power cost 3 before, and now it costs 2 for Summon Pet, which summons an animal companion.
That seems like a pretty good boost, not going to lie. I've seen a lot of hunters on ladder using this very effectively. I think that lowering the mana makes it that much better. It costs less than the cost of an animal companion through your spells. So can't complain about that.
And it lines it up closer with other hero powers too. On top of it, it's an upgrade, right? It's a distinct upgrade. Like when you think about not only if you just got Huffer, right? Because everyone thinks, oh, always Huffer, right?
Or Lyric or whatever its name is.
Yeah, but everyone's expecting to get Huffers out of it, not Leoric or Misha, right?
Right.
So distinctly, if it was that, it would be 4 damage going face instead of just the 2 from the hero power. I still feel like that's an amazing upgrade for Beast Stalker Tavish. The Gray Sage Parrot went from the old cost of 8 mana with 6 attack and 6 health to the new cost of 6 mana with 4 attack and 5 health.
It's a pretty good bird that wasn't seeing play. So I can definitely see this changing in Mage. Just because it is kind of expensive still at 6, I think.
And distinctly, I think that it's also a nice kind of upgrade too, because there's also like that 5 mana mage spell that like it does damage to enemy minions. I'm trying to think of the name of it off the top of my head. It came out in the mini set, Arcane Overflow. It deals 8 damage to an enemy minion and then summons a remnant with stats equal to the excess damage. So it specifically targets enemy minions and allows you to develop a board. Well, this will continue that, allowing the parrot to kind of feel like a real parrot, right? You're not just looking at, I think they were initially looking at the 7 mana spell, right? The Mask of C'Thun as what it was trying to repeat at 8 mana, but turns weren't even getting that far. And so maybe by moving it to this 6 cost and making it earlier, it allows it to kind of do its thing a little bit sooner and kind of have an impact in some games as well.
The 6 is kind of where the killer blow starts to line up. So at least the 2-turn people.
Mm-hmm. And following that, then we also have Magister Dawngrasp going from the old cost of 8 mana to 7 mana. And its old hero power deals 1 damage, honorable kill, gain plus 2 damage to a new hero power of deal 2 damage and honorable kill, gain plus 2 damage.
This feels like it should have been played before. I'm not sure why it wasn't, or that why I hadn't run into it much. This makes it all that much better.
With it moving to 7 mana, just even with the buff to the parrot, you kind of can see how it lines up kind of evenly with that. You could play your parrot on, parrot on 6 after you've done your Arcane Overflow, you've developed a little bit, get your Magister on 7. And then you're off to the races. I feel like that's kind of where it's setting itself up for. It also goes into this other buff that we're going to talk about in just a second as well.
Yeah, I think the lowering will make it a little bit more, the lowering of the mana cost will make it a little bit more used. And the hero power, they made the change. Oh, we are going to talk about that next to the wildfire. So let's just jump over there.
Yeah, so before Wildfire, the old part of it was that it would increase the damage of your hero power by 1. To new, increase the damage of your hero by 1 this game, which means that it's a minor rework, so that way the effect of Wildfire now persists when you swap over your hero power to Magister Dawngrasp. Although they didn't envision this being dramatically impactful, they do think it allows for a smoother gameplay experience with the hero power changing cards like Magister Dawngrasp. So before, it used to just reset and it would go. So if you increased your hero power to say 2 damage or 3 damage, it would set it back down to 1. So now you can continue to have it increase and then increase exponentially to where you're potentially even, you know, taking a hero down by 14 with your hero power.
I've really enjoyed decks built around Wildfire and hero power. Obviously, there's more of that available in Wild, but these kind of cards are kind of fun when they build in a little bit more synergy by, you know, just making them more affordable and making sure that they still work afterwards. It was always kind of frustrating in Wild if you played the Wildfire, then you couldn't really use it after you swapped it out. So I sort of swapped out the hero power. So I like the change.
So that would even impact cards like Frostlich Jaina, right?
Yep.
That's kind of interesting as well, right? Like, there's going to be some fun to be had in Wild with that as well, I bet.
There's fun to be had in Duels with that too. So
nice. Okay, and there were a few Battlegrounds balance updates as well, with a couple hero power changes. Sneed went from his armor tier changed, as well as his hero power went from an old cost of 1 to a new cost of 2. Which, if you've played Sneed at all in Battlegrounds, you know that hero power could really rapidly scale to where you'd put it all on your highest tiered minion and be able to summon multiple upon multiple upon multiple minions after you ensured that it was the last minion to die, making it very easy for you to win the Battlegrounds altogether. I appreciate the change to costing 2. And
I haven't really played Battlegrounds very much, so I'm not going to have too much of an opinion because I haven't really paid attention to this meta. I'm glad that you saw that and think that it's a good change.
Damson, Fragrant Phylactery went from the old cost of 0 to for destroy your lowest health minion, give its health to all others, to now new cost 1 at the start of combat, destroy your lowest health minion and give its stats to all your others. So now it gives attack and also health to the other minions. It's kind of a minor change, but it can have a little bit more of an impact. I don't know if this necessarily makes Tamsin really a mainstay hero, but maybe that change will get her to see more play.
I really like that they've made the changes very quickly for Battlegrounds and aren't afraid to experiment with buffs or nerfs or both at the same time.
Yeah, that's definitely where they're going. With that too, there's also a bunch of changes to where some of the heroes fit on the tiers for armor, which also means that you're going to see some of the armors changing. There's a lot of them, so we're not going to go over all of them. You can definitely check the patch notes for it. But also you'll notice those differences as well when you go to select your heroes. And I really appreciate that they're doing that, because going forward, that's going to allow for a little bit easier balancing of various heroes by kind of boosting up those heroes that seem to be lower in the tier rates to allow them to have a chance to kind of stabilize and get to a point where they can go up against some of those other heroes that kind of are just tier 1 because of just their hero power. There are a couple changes to just a few minions, with the prize promo Drake going from an old 5 attack, 5 health to 3 attack and 3 health. It's a minor change. It's really the benefit from the prize promo Drake comes from its ability, which is give adjacent minions +1/+1 for each friendly dragon, because it would work well with, I'm going to mess up the dragon's name, Terengosa, the one that keeps the buffs that were given to it in combat throughout the rest of the game. And then also Dazzling Lightspawn going from a 4 attack, 5 health to 2 attack and 5 health. And again, this is another minion where it's the ability, the Avenge 2, where elementals in Bob's Tavern get +1/+1 for the rest of the game, is really the benefit from it. So getting them to have a little less attack means that they're not going to be also like benefiting your combat. They're kind of at a detriment. You're getting this powerful ability, but you're not necessarily getting them as a fighter in your current lobby.
Right. The first time I read it, I thought it just gave it to him permanently and could be that space that you use to cycle through cards for a whole bunch of different heroes. But since it's just at combat, then I don't know, 3/3s, in my experience, haven't been all that great unless you have an easy way to build them up. As a dragon, there are ways to buff. So, you know, late game, maybe. But a 3/3 doesn't get a lot done on the board, for sure.
Very true. And so then with Mercenaries, there's an update where all heroic level 30 bounties will now include at least one pile of legendary coins chosen from the selection of coins designated for each bounty as part of their bounty completion rewards. So that's actually a big change. And I think they're trying to drive people back to Mercenaries, trying to get those legendary minions all the way upgraded. Sometimes that's really hard to do. Those legendary coins are hard to come by. Either you're going to end up spending a lot on packs and maybe not even getting the coins that you need. And this kind of allows you to still get those legendary minions all fully upgraded, which is definitely a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I know somebody that really went hard. Interval is his stream name, that bought enough packs to get an all platinum set of the mercenaries. So that's pretty crazy amount of money that they're looking for, you know, both with all the bundles, with mercenaries now, with multiple battlegrounds, hero portraits and things like that, going back to just a ocean of new stuff to buy.
Definitely. And I feel like this change definitely allows for more free-to-play players to be able to grind, at least to be able to earn the coins that they need for those legendary mercenaries. There was an update mm-hmm. for Arena. Abominable Lieutenant is no longer draftable in Arena. Minor change, but definitely that's a powerful card. I've seen it utilized a lot by Jiminator. I don't know if you know who he is. He's been playing a fun deck with a lot of the tickets in it as well, using the Lieutenant and kind of like that Shuffle Rogue. And I can see how that card could get kind of out of hand as well with some of the various Death Rattles that are incredibly powerful and in Arena, being able to double them can probably get out of hand.
Yeah, I haven't played a lot of Arena either lately, but it really needed something to fix it or just remove it. I think that removing it in Arena's very fair and safe, because you don't want it to be just a who had a better luck on the draw, right?
Kind of puts you more on an even footing for sure. And then there was a bug fix and game improvement. The base versions of Drekthar and Vandar are now eligible for full dust refunds, and they'll be doing a separate update later on patch day to grant additional arcane dust to players who already disenchanted either card. This is a big change. I know there was a lot of uproar because initially their thought process was that the golden versions that you were going to receive because of your selection of either Alliance or Horde, and then what you would receive from your honor was seen as like a cosmetic upgrade. Kind of like if you buy the Tavern Pass and then you get the diamond version of Sumuro. If you don't get the Tavern Pass, you don't get that diamond version. But you could potentially still open and pack the regular version. However, they kind of went back and said, you know what? Fair enough. Yeah, we're not going to make you pay for opening the wrong thing in your pack.
Well, that was a lot of updates.
And the last one was fixed a bug where a Duel's Treasure Incredible Trousers. that's a hard one to say. Did not properly shuffle the Imp portals, and now it will. So that's a minor thing, but a lot of stuff in this batch for sure. And we'll be able to see in the coming days how that impacts everything for sure.
So because we're in winter and in this holiday season, there's a lot of things that show up on TV as happening in the snow and cold and whatnot. So we've decided to try a couple of decks really quick. One very popular one is Freeze Shaman, which I'll let Noodle tell what he's found.
So Freeze Shaman is definitely one of the newest archetypes that got developed in Fractured and Alterac Valley. So kind of a new one coming out. And I definitely think it, on top of that, not only did it come out and kind of show that it can definitely be a deck. It's not just a meme anymore. It's no Morabi. It's actually out there for real. And it's doing some great things. And I mean, it's kind of taking the ladder by storm, or should I say Blizzard? So with that, I know No Hands Gamer, he's been a big proponent for the list, and he's definitely made it to rank one with the list. And he keeps revising it and coming out with new versions of it, which are based off of like things that he's seeing in the meta. So you may see one list that says his name on it. You may see another list, and it's really just which is the current most updated list based on what the meta is. So even now with these nerfs and changes, you may see slight changes in that list again. But the current list that he's going off of includes two Lightning Blooms, one Armor Vendor, two Devolving Missiles, one Wind Chill, two Auction House Gavels, one Bolnir Hammerbeak, one Cage Match Custodian, two Cult Neophytes, one Frostbite, two Sleepbreaker, two Brilliant Macaw, two Cheaty Snowbolts, one Instructor Fireheart, one Rustrot Viper, two Multicasters, two Wildpaw Cavern, one Battleground Battlemaster, two Snowfall Guardians, one Mutinous the Devourer, and one Brucan of the Elements. And with that, there, as you'll notice, there's various battle cries that are in the list, and those are important to note because of the fact that Bolnir Hammerbeak is in the list, as well as the Brilliant Macaws, which allow you to copy your battle cries, very much like a Shudderwalk kind of feel. Which is kind of like a shaman staple, is that repeating battle cries. And I feel like this list does it very well. But knowing how to utilize those battle cries and knowing your matchups is important for the mulligan. If you're going up against an aggro list, holding on to your armor vendors and even your devolving missiles, depending on the list that you're up against. If it's Paladin, for example, you're going to want to hold those things. And maybe even holding on to like the Cage Match Custodian, because you can then gain your Auction House Gavel and be able to kind of respond to the various threats that are on the board. Whereas if you know you're going up against a slower deck, you may end up choosing something else. Granted, every deck out there could also just be Rogue in disguise. but you definitely try your best to make those judgment calls. I've heard that if the portrait's not golden, it probably is Rogue, but I don't know if that's always the case.
Oh, interesting.
that's my little tip out there. But beyond that, also holding on to Lightning Bloom and the Wildpaw Cavern together is a great starting hand because of the fact that the Wildpaw Cavern gives you those 3/4 stags that freeze when they hit and keeps progressively producing them. On turn two, you can get that out there and get those developing. It is a little slow, but at the same time, having a 3/4 on turn two right away that freezes things is amazing. And then to have that progressively kind of snowball out of control is kind of a good thing.
That's actually quite interesting because when I saw the list and I've played it, and it seems pretty straightforward how to play. You just gave me some ideas for how complex it you really can be. So always good to learn something
for sure. And like the Cult Neophytes, those are great against, say, your Druid opponents that are going to be playing kind of that Celestial Alignment list. Now, if we end up seeing more of the aggro version, perhaps you'll tech your cards a little bit differently, perhaps you end up, if you see, you're seeing a lot of aggro in your pocket meta, maybe switch out one of those cult neophytes for an extra armor vendor. If you're seeing a lot of weapons, maybe you need another rust rot viper instead. And you can make those choices based on what you see, but also realize that some of those individual buffs are fine just being one, because you're going to be able to repeat them with Bolner. So perhaps you get down Bolner and then a cult neophyte, and then you play another, like say Brilliant Macaw, you might get that double battle cry of the cult neophyte, and that's something that can really shut down a lot of those decks that are just spell based.
Yeah, there's shutting down, there's something similar with shutting down everybody on the masters too, so
and
definitely yeah, see it even at high levels.
And then even shutting down, if you're focused on spells, it's going to be on that cult neophyte, trying to make sure that you're developing those with Bolner. So Bolner is one of those things that you're definitely going to want to keep in your hand, but choosing when to play him and how to maximize that play to where you're going to close out games, it's definitely something that it takes time to figure out. It's not necessarily always a straightforward deck to play, but it is a lot of fun, and you can definitely freeze out your opponents using your wind chills, even to draw cards, even on your own minions sometimes, depending on what you're up against. If you're not seeing a lot, if they're not developing a board, maybe freezing your own minion is your way of being able to draw cards and get further to the things that you need in order to actually win the game. For example, getting to Bolner a Mutinous, or Mutinous and then a Brilliant Macaw, allows you to take out some of those combo pieces. So maybe you can snag out, you know, that owl that you need to get rid of, or another combo piece that allows you to be the one that wins the game.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. On my side, I went with something fun. So Freeze Mage was one of my favorite early archetypes and one that I played in classic mode. So it's been a while since it's been viable anywhere, so I gave it my best shot. There's not a lot of Freeze Mages lists out there, so I kind of started with the Frost spells and then the things that had synergy with it. Unfortunately, it didn't do so well. I was able to win with it a few times, and there's nothing really more fun than beating somebody up with a snowman, which is the only class that has that card. So, I wouldn't say that it's something you would take on ladder, but if you want to just goof around and try to beat somebody up with the snowman or one of his entourage, then we'll put the list in the show notes. But yeah.
Okay.
So the last thing, Noodle has prepared us a little song, not necessarily a card of the week. We'll call it a carol of the week.
You know, with the fact that Alterac Valley kind of allowed us to have access to a lot of fun cards, I feel like it's only fair that we give you the 12 Days of Christmas Hearthstone style, which gives you a chance to hear about multiple cards, not just one. On the 12th day of Christmas, Hearthstone gave to me 12 Stags of Freezing,
11 Agents Doubling,
10 Shields of Shattering,
9 Disciples of Dying,
8 Wolves of Stealthing,
7 Imps of Shuffling,
6 Korak Blood Raging, 5 Brass Wings, 4 Flanking Maneuvers,
3 Different Snowmen,
2 Mountain Cubs, and a Fracture in Alterac Valley.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
How do you think?
Thanks for joining us on that little tour of Alterac Valley.
All right. Well, that'll wrap us up for now. But again, I want to thank Noodle Soup for stepping in and making sure that I'm accountable to doing this as our new co-host. You'll hear a lot more from both of us. And yeah, at the end here, is there anything you'd like to say?
Well, I mean, now that makes me a co-host. I'm not just a guest. That means that we can also have guests join both of us, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so like, I guess you need to hit us up on Twitter and let us know if you want to be a guest on the Happy Hearthstone.
Absolutely. So, and we're not looking for any experts. You don't have to be expert level. If it's just a game or deck that you want to share with the community, if there's something outside of Hearthstone but maybe Hearthstone related, like you know, some new socks or something that you made special for Hearthstone, but it's all interesting things to talk about. So for sure, if you have any interest of being on the podcast, please reach out to me. And my Twitter and Twitch links will be posted as part of the show notes as well.
You can also reach out to me because now I'm a co-host, so that means you can let me know if you want to join as well.
Where is the best place to reach you?
You've got NoodleSwoopHS on Twitter and also on Twitch, and I'm NoodleSwoop pretty much everywhere, so even in the Discord too.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for being here, and look forward to our next guest.
For sure.
Thank you all for tuning in to our special holiday episode. I hope that you enjoyed the content, and if you did, there's a couple ways you can help without even being a Patreon, and that's to write a review on your favorite podcast site or reach out to me if you'd like to be a guest. We're always looking for new people to share their experiences with Hearthstone. Much love and happy holidays.